Welcome back inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm John Ledyard from over at FanRagSports.com, along with Trevor Sikkema of PewterReport.com, who covers the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and we are back on the show. We had a Friday off for travel purposes and then chilled over the weekend, tried to catch up on sleep and recover, at least I did, from a wild Senior Bowl week. Trev, you were maybe not sleeping as much as I was this past weekend?
Yeah, they had their little Mardi Gras event down here in Tampa Bay, so my catch-up for sleep was kind of last night, but that's good. Timing's good, because now we're recharged, we're getting into everything, so right. Don't worry. I won't be too out of the zone for this podcast.
No, I hear you. It's one of those weird things where, I mean, I don't know when I'm there in Mobile asleep, like, maybe 5 hours a night for like a whole week straight.
I wrote this in one of my previews. Is there a faster 3 days on our calendar?
Oh my goodness.
Senior Bowl week?
It's crazy. It's a blur.
I felt like I was there and I was leaving like within 24 hours. We packed so much stuff into that Senior Bowl, whether it comes to watching the players, doing the media night, getting to interview them, watching that All 22 film, getting to talk with all the other writers, getting to see them and everything like that. It is such a fun week, and it's such a valuable week for us, not even just for watching the players, but, you know, getting to see you and Kyle and Joe and all that. You know, we did that super show last week, and so many other writers and NFL draft guys that we get to meet, that makes that experience, that 3 days, worth it, and kind of give us definitely a new push up until the combine, and then that into pro days, and then, hey, we're at the NFL draft.
It's funny because I've had so many people, I don't know if you get this, but I've had so many people over the years tell me it's weird that to think about you guys not being in the same room when you record the podcast, because for to them it seems like we're in the same room and we're actually not even in the same state. So you know, it's funny because this was the first time that ever happened where we were next to each other while we recorded the podcast, and obviously awesome to be joined by the Draft Dudes, Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino. Check out Draft Dudes podcast. Last week, we had three, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, we had three super shows previewing the Senior Bowl, and then talking about on Wednesday, day one of practices, and on Thursday, day two of practices. Tons of good information went over with those guys, and they were longer shows, they were bigger shows, so we only did three last week, but really, really good content and good information. You get a lot of different opinions, and that's why I liked it. And I know I'm looking at the numbers from the podcast, and they were three of since we moved to Panoply and our numbers and kind of everything reset, which was a couple months ago now. Mm-hmm. They were 2, 3, and 4 in our podcast rankings in terms of most listened to podcasts in Locked On NFL Draft Panoply history, at least. I don't know what the Audio Boom side of things had looked like before, but so that was really, really cool to see the numbers kind of skyrocket last week, and a lot of attraction as people wanted to hear all those opinions. But a big week this week, obviously less so for the draft. I mean, obviously every week's big for us in terms of talking draft this time of year, but also for the Super Bowl. The big game's here, and it's time to cash in big and bet the game at mybookie.ag. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect weekend to get into the action. Have a hunch on who's going to win the coin toss or what color Gatorade the winning coach will be wearing. Well, log on now, check out the props, and get in on the action. Don't just watch the game, lay down some money and be a part of it. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at mybookie.ag. MyBookie is the industry-leading online sportsbook, and its players enjoy the fastest payouts in the business when they win. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me and our listeners. I've heard from tons of listeners that have really enjoyed the MyBookie products. That's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay, without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else. They even have in-game live betting, so you can place a bet after kickoff. Join now and score free cash to place your Super Bowl wager on the house. Right now, MyBookie is giving away up to $1,000 to every new player. Sign up today to score an instant 50% bonus on your first deposit. That's right, if you join with $100, you'll get $150 bankroll to play with. Use that promo code, LOCKEDON. Locked On is the promo code to activate the offer. Play, win, and get paid. Check out mybookie.ag this week, guys. Win some money on this Super Bowl week. Big, big week for that. Trev, we got to wrap up our Senior Bowl thoughts. We got to give our final impressions from the week. We thought about going like top five winners and losers and something like that, but we figured, why really be structured now? We're a fly by the seat of our pants type of duo here, so we're
the Baker Mayfield of process, exactly. Podcast, you know.
We like to get outside the pocket, get outside of structure, improvise a little bit, make things happen that are magical. That's our MO. So Having that context, who were your top standouts from the 2018 Senior Bowl? Maybe just give me one dude and we'll alternate at least back and forth.
I mean, I've got to say, man, Nathan Shepard from Fort Hays State, he's going to be my big guy because as I've been writing my own recaps and reading it of others, I feel like I don't want to get too caught up in things, right? I don't want to be too much of a prisoner in the moment. This is a guy that I knew nothing about going into the week. Not a big Fort Hays State football watcher. So I know, tough to believe, but he really flew under the radar for me. I got to learn a little bit about him, how he started playing college football in Canada, ended up taking 2 years off, then he ends up at Fort Hays State. So there is a past of his that I need to dig in and learn more about. But in terms of what I saw last week, that on the field stuff, he was by far, if you ask me, the most impressive prospect at the Senior Bowl. He was dominating almost every single one-on-one he was up in. We went into the week, a lot of people thought that the Michigan center, Mason Cole, they were like, hey, you know, this is a good prospect. I'm pretty high on this guy. I think he can play multiple positions on that interior offensive line. He's also played tackle some for Michigan. Let me just say, homeboy got worked. like beat like a drum by Nathan Shepard on every rep. And I say this when I did my little Nace, because I had Mason Cole as one of my most disappointing players in the week I ran. And I put in there, hey, this might be just because I watched him get worked by Nathan Shepard four times, and that's unlucky of him. But hand usage, explosiveness, power in the legs. He's 6'3", I believe, like right around 300, 305 pounds. He wears it so well. He almost looks like a pure strongman bulldozer athlete at that 300 pounds. So wears his weight well, has tons of functional talent and strength in what he's doing. And to think that the only two colleges that he's ever been at his whole life are in Canada and then Fort Hays State, what might this guy be like with this kind of explosiveness, violence, strength in the NFL with NFL coaching? And so he broke his hand on the second day, so we did not get to see a full week of him. But even on that second day, they were running through installs, and he was working people through double teams, and he was holding up the point of attack. So just obviously, as you can tell in my voice and how fast I'm talking about him, all everything I want to get in there, this guy was so impressive. So he was my big takeaway from Senior Bowl week, is that this is a guy who I have to look up, that I have to do a lot more research on, because if you give me what I saw from Nathan Shepard at all times,
right,
that's a top 30 player for me,
right?
So there you go.
We watched him in practice and we thought, wow, he's impressive. And then you go up to the Exos room and you watch him on the all 22 of the practice, and every single one-on-one, it wasn't like he was like kind of winning or winning late. He was dominating people,
right?
He looked like a five-star type prospect.
He did.
And again, like you said, you don't want to be prisoner of the moment. You know, it's one day of practice and it's practice, you know, and there's, but my goodness, like the explosiveness, the coming off the ball low and dropping his pad level, as I thought was an issue on tape, the hand usage was improved in more detail. He swam people, he spun on people, you know, he was push-pulling guys, ripping underneath him on the edge, you know, setting things up with stutter steps. I don't know. And it was in the team periods too, not just the one-on-one. So, you're right. The way he looked in that one day of practice, he looked like a top 30 type pick. Now, is that translatable? You know, I saw his tape coming in. I liked a lot of things about him. I thought he could definitely be a day two type pick. I had seen parts of two games, I think, and I thought he had great traits. He was my sleeper going into the week. I talked him up on the podcast, but even I didn't expect anything like what he put forth on Tuesday. It was incredibly impressive. So, still a lot to his evaluation. Obviously, we'll see how he tests. It seems like the word out there is that he will be ready to go for the combine. But he was absolutely one of the big winners of the week. Kamoko Ture from Rutgers. This kid was probably another big winner for me in terms of guys who practiced all 3 days. He was so impressive. Played in the game, was great in the game. His ankle bend and flexibility, not so much in the hips. I don't think he's stiff there. I thought he might have been on tape when I first watched him. I think it's more he just bends with those ankles so well. He can kind of dip under contact, and those ankles are like, the side of his ankle is like flat on the ground when he turns corners. It's insane. some of the tight corners that he turned to the pocket, he's able to run around guys. He's a little bit high at the top of the arc, but he started to drop that shoulder and really become more effective at clearing those hands. And when he times up and doesn't false step out of that first that stance, I mean, he has all the traits you want in a pass rusher, because there's that speed up the arc, there's the long legs, there's the bend and the dip ability at the top of the arc. He's flashed really good hand usage up there too at the top of the arc. And then if you can win outside of tackle, you can learn the other stuff. He probably will never be a speed to power guy, but he can absolutely be an inside counter guy. And you saw that in the tapes of the practices this week and even during practice. You know, he made that inside move, strong inside move, work a little bit. So he thinks on his feet some. The issues with Turi are going to be run defense is kind of, on tape, it's definitely some issues there. He gets put on the ground a couple times, and, you know, kind of general awareness of concepts and things like that sometimes is limited. But the NFL will pay a premium if you can get after the quarterback. And, man, he definitely looked like a guy that could get after the quarterback this week.
For my next guys I was really impressed with, I'm going to go in the secondary, and I'm actually going to choose two guys. So feel free to chime in with your comments on these guys too. The first one is safety Kaiser White from West Virginia, and the other one is MJ Stewart, the cornerback from North Carolina. I thought both these guys had really great weeks. And you know, you and I, people who listen to the show, they know that we didn't really know who was going to stand out from this cornerback group going into it. It was a lot of smaller school guys, some smaller names, guys that we hadn't heard of before, which meant that it was kind of wide open for somebody to take over. Kaiser White, a lot of people told me that he was more of a box safety, more of a strong safety type, and we did see some of that early on, but we also saw them throw him into the fire and play a free safety role. Yeah. He played single high quite a bit. He played cover three and cover one. They had him in zone coverage, almost in a robber role, where he got an interception on the first day. So if his tape says that he's a good, strong safety already, and that you already know he can tackle and play in the box and be physical, and then this week we saw him play free safety as well, that makes you pretty dang valuable as a safety. You know, that'll up your value quite a bit. And I thought that Kaiser White had a good week all around. All 3 days that I watched him, I thought that there were at least a couple of plays. And it's tough to watch everything, even though you're watching practice the whole time. It's tough to catch guys at all times. But I can remember each day there were a handful of stuff that I remembered from White. So that's always good to have. And then MJ Stewart, we weren't sure which corners were going to stand out here. But he, as Jonah Tulls was saying the first day, was in people's hip pockets almost a week. You know, it didn't really matter what kind of receiver it was, whether it was, you know, a big guy like Alan Lazard, a quick guy in the routes like James Washington. So he was able to keep up with everybody. I thought he made an even playing field with his wide receivers. Did he not have an interception this year? I think
that's right. He hasn't had an interception in the past 2 years.
Yeah, okay. So he has not. The takeaways, the lack of takeaways are going to hurt him. And I know people are going to say, oh, Jalen Ramsey. Okay, easy on the Jalen Ramsey comps, pal. You know, like, Jalen Ramsey is super special. And they definitely did not throw the ball at Jalen Ramsey much when he was playing outside corner. But you can't always use that as an example. But on the flip side, when you see how he performed at a Senior Bowl against different kinds of wide receivers and you see him faring well, that's a part that you definitely remember. So I thought both of those guys in the secondary were my two standouts for a position that you and I really didn't know who was going to stand out going into the week.
Right. We barely even talked about defensive back because we'd seen some of these guys, but not enough. I mean, so many small school guys. I was kind of waiting to see what small school guys stood out. And as I reviewed tape and watched one-on-ones, you know, I didn't see anything other than day three depth picks, maybe with some development. And that's all I saw from practices. I have to get to their tape too. But, you know, Danny Johnson from Southern, DeMontre Wade from Murray State, Saron Neal from Jacksonville State. I know you liked Saron Neal. I didn't see him do a whole lot. Chandon Sullivan struggled, I thought, in the game and in practice. You know, there was some good moments with Teron Johnson from Weber State, but for the most part, I thought he was definitely a work in progress. Michael Joseph, same thing. I kind of liked some things that I saw in the safety group, though, from Trayvon Henderson, and I think that he has a chance to be a real riser from this week, because Henderson was terrific. I know you only saw a little bit of the game, I think, but Henderson was terrific against the run in the game. I think he had 10 tackles and like led his team. I forget which team he was even on. But he was the North team. Yeah, I think he had 10 tackles and led the team. He made three of those around the line of scrimmage. I think one was for loss. 6 foot, 204 pounds. he hit people, but he also made some great open field tackles and some elusive ball carriers. And throughout the week, you saw his man coverage ability. He matched up with Mike Gesicki and did some good things there, made a one-handed interception. He was hurt his junior year. Ethan Young, I was talking to down at the Senior Bowl, and he was saying Trayvon Henderson was hurt his junior year, and he was like on nobody's radar coming into the year. And a lot of NFL teams, you know, they do their evaluation process when these guys are juniors, and, you know, they're not set in stone, but, they, you know, they're catching up with everybody else. And so Henderson had a really good senior year at Hawaii, and so everybody's kind of catching up on him now. And man, he looks the part. He moved really well. He tackled really well. Also,
playing in Hawaii, you know?
Right.
Like, that's got to be part of it. We don't get to see Hawaii games. Sure. So.
Yeah, and this was a huge for him, level competition and all that, and I thought he stood out and looked great throughout the week. So he was probably one of the biggest guys for me that rose up boards. Did you think it was weird, and maybe you had a different impression than me, in the practices, which wide receiver looked the best to you out of all these guys?
Probably James Washington.
Right. I would agree. Okay. Yeah. I didn't think James Washington had an unbelievable week, but he looked better than the rest of the group. In the game, I don't think James Washington caught the ball, which is not like a huge concern or anything like that. Like, not like a big knock on him, but it was really funny because Washington really didn't do anything in the game. And somebody like DJ Chark, who was getting a ton of flack throughout the week, right?
Mm-hmm.
He balled out in the game. I think.
Washington didn't have a catch.
Yeah, Washington didn't have a catch, and Chark had 5 catches for 160 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah, but Deshaun Hamilton also had 1 catch for 5 yards, so he would have been the second most impressive receiver.
Right. So then and again, he doesn't do anything in the game. So it does make you kind of mull over. Now, James Washington says enough on paper that you're not as worried about him producing in the game, but Deshaun Hamilton, you know, was kind of he dropped a pass in the game, and he dropped. I think he was good at getting open. Hamilton's week was very, I don't know, hard to quantify to me because he was great at getting open. He really understood route running and when to improvise and working back to the ball. But he dropped probably more passes than anybody else. I mean, and there was a lot of drops this week. You know, Lazard dropped several on Tuesday, and Justin Watson, the Penn kid, dropped a ton throughout the entire week. And you saw a lot of drop passes throughout the whole, but I think Deshaun Hamilton might have dropped more than any in from what I've been told, and seeing a couple Penn State games this year, that's kind of consistent with what he did on tape too. So I think you would say James Washington was the best receiver here. And if you say maybe Deshaun was the second most impressive one in other respects, but I just feel like for the most part, we didn't really see anybody separate themselves from this wide receiver group, did we? I mean, like Marcel Aitman, you know, we were hoping to see maybe guys like him or Tre'Quan Smith or Cedric Wilson, Michael Gallup kind of separate themselves from the rest of the group. I didn't really see that happen this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess from guys who we didn't think would stand out maybe. And we thought the wide receiver was going to be the group was going to be a little bit different.
That's true.
I'm thinking to myself, I guess there were guys who I think like helped their stock, but not necessarily like separate. Like you said, like you go away. Right. And might have thought that they were a lot better than they were.
Like, I didn't think that Marcel Aitman or Alan Lazard, who I think were two of the bigger names, you know, bigger names than like Jaleel Scott or Justin Watson or Deshaun Hamilton or Braxton Berrios, you know, I didn't think that those guys helped their stock this week. Yeah, I think Michael Gallup did some good things. You know, yeah, there were some inconsistencies, but I think he did some good things. He showed me some pretty good route running ability that I didn't know that he had on tape. So I think he helped himself maybe a little bit. And I like Chark. I know that he isn't the most consistent player, but you know, for a vertical type offense, I think he's going to be a nice weapon, provided he runs how I think he can run. Jamon Moore just is so inconsistent. You know, there's some really good things to like about Jamon Moore, but it was kind of that way with the tight end group too. A lot of people came in the week talking about Ian Thomas. You know, he could be this athlete, yada yada. I thought he looked like the worst athlete of the tight end group. I mean, I did not think he was explosive at all.
I thought he looked a little awkward at times.
Yeah.
Very, really disappointing with Goddard and Brenneman going out.
Yes, it was. Like, and then Fumagalli didn't play in the game.
Like 4 plays in, dude.
Right. It was like boom, boom, right at the beginning of practice.
Yes.
Goddard beat somebody deep and then got hurt like the next play. And Brenneman might have lasted like 1 rep. So we didn't get to see those guys at all. And then Fumagalli didn't play in the game. I did not think Fumagalli was impressive in practice. I like Tyler Conklin's game. I just don't think he's going to test really well at all. He had trouble running away from people. Going to be a lot of tight window throws to that dude. Durham Smythe had – I think he had a good week. This was my dude coming in. he caught a touchdown in the game. He showed that he can do things as a receiver. He got down the seam, made some plays on the ball this week, made a ton of tight window catches. I don't think he's going to be a great athlete, but I think he's good enough, and I think he's the best blocker of the group. I was happy about my Durham Smythe takeaways this week.
That's fair.
What about Gesicki, though? Some people said Gesicki was awesome. Some people said, I don't know.
Look, Gesicki was good. Gesicki was really good. Like, Wednesday and Thursday, he was.
But in the game, he was bad again, you know? He didn't come up with a couple tough catches in the game. He fumbled one. He didn't fumble. He should have been a fumble. He caught it and then got rocked. And like, he just, I don't know. He just, like, he's such a hard eval.
I'm no higher. Like, I think Gesicki had a good week. Probably the best week out of tight ends, I think, Gesicki had in practice.
That's fair.
It doesn't change my opinion of him because, like, I still don't think he can block. So
he can't block, like, and he has to be able to run away from people. I don't think he's great underneath, but I think his hands are great down the field. So I'd want him in a vertical offense, even though that requires him running, because he's so good in the air and his hands are so good. Like, he's just good at addressing the football. So I want him where the ball's going to be flighted. That's all. But he couldn't come up with a red zone feint. It was underthrown. But again, you want him to come up with those. You know, he's working against Jeremy Reeves, and, you know, Reeves made the play. And
Reeves has baby hands.
Yeah, baby hands. He's like 5'10". Reeves did check in 20 pounds over his listed college weight. How about that? He was listed 185 on South Alabama's site. He was 204 pounds, and he looked great. He was awesome in the game. I know he didn't stand out in practice, but Reeves was so good. I mean, he had an interception in the game. I think he had two or three pass breakups. I don't know what they credit him with, but, you know, he was active against the run.
Trying to put on weight in his hands.
He's going to get that masseuse to get his hands out to that Brandon Allen got. Get his hands out to 8 inches.
Yeah. Did Brandon Allen actually do that?
Oh, yeah. Brandon Allen was under the threshold, man. He was about to be undrafted. Then he went to a little hand masseuse. They worked things out, got his hands a little bigger, and there he was, I think, in the fifth round for Jacksonville, or sixth round or something. Heir apparent to Blake Bortles because of the hand masseuse.
Dude, Brandon Allen, best quarterback on the Jags this year. Don't at me. Do not at me.
I know. But do not at all. I was trying to explain to my mother-in-law when I got home from this. She was, like, asking about the event, you know, and being polite and everything. And, you know, I was like, yeah, like, there's weigh-ins early in the morning. And she's like, what happens at weigh-ins? I was like, well, yeah, all these guys, yeah, they walk across the stage in their compression shorts. And, you know, we, you know, get their height and weight and their hand size and their arm length. She's like, why does all that matter? I was like, well, if certain quarterbacks aren't at certain thresholds for hand size, they don't get drafted. You know, it can be quarter of an inch, but, you know, it just kind of,
you're sounding like an idiot.
Yeah, then I'm like, wait, this is stupid, man. Nobody people just don't understand unless you're into the draft. It sounds really weird, but how about a couple guys maybe who didn't stand out to you in a positive way this week? I know there were some offensive linemen we really liked and some other guys that we liked in general, like Fred Warner had a great week and Justin Jones, and defensive tackle from North Carolina State, but some guys where you came into the week and you were just like hoping to see more and they just didn't really do anything for you.
Well, I mean, I'll talk about this, and you and I actually talked about this on Twitter early this morning, which is Monday morning, and so it's a good thing that we should probably talk about it on the podcast. My guy's Marcus Davenport, and the reason why is because Marcus Davenport, before the Senior Bowl kicked off, got mocked number 7 overall by Daniel Jeremiah to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and Jeremiah is not really a let's just switch things up for clicks kind of a guy. And so he's pretty authentic in the way that he scouts and the way that he reports. And I know he does – now he has a saying that he does his big boards with his eyes and he does his mock drafts with his ears, meaning he slots players to where he hears they're going
right
in a mock draft, not necessarily where he would rank them. Where he would rank them, he does in his big board. But Marcus Davenport, the defensive end at a UTSA, is getting all kinds of hype because he's young. He's long. He's got a great body frame. There are certain parts of his game that you really like on tape. I love how violent his hands are. I love how he can push back an offensive lineman. But what I don't like is that he gets bullied around in the run game. When he doesn't get momentum, he's not really able to anchor his body. He gets kind of pushed around in ways like that. And if he's got to learn how to get off blocks better, how to use his length better, and to just not get sure that he gets locked up, because he's just not as dense of a guy body weight wise, to where he can really plant his foot down when he's getting pushed back, stop, and push them back. And that's kind of a big deal for playing defensive line, especially when half of what you do is against the run. And so Marcus Davenport was one of my most disappointing guys, because it didn't matter which offensive lineman he was going up against, he seemed to get bullied. And yep. you can't get bullied like that when you're going to be a top 10 pick. You just mm-hmm. can't. Now, this is the part that we said on Twitter. I got to meet Marcus at the Senior Bowl, because that's a cool right. part of it. Love the kid. I think he's a great kid. I'm rooting for him. But, like, here I am only talking about the negatives of Marcus Davenport, because I'm over here having to dispute that the kid's going to go number 7 overall, or should go number 7 overall. I think Marcus Davenport's a day 2 pick. I think he's kind of much more of a project than we think. But, obviously, he has a good amount of tools and talent there for you to mold. He's not a top 10 pick right now. If you pick a player in the top 10 in the first round in general, they have to play for you. This is a guy right. that has to contribute for you. And if you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers especially, because that's where I'm coming from, you can't pick this kid mm-hmm. and expect him to be a three-down defensive right. lineman, because right. he's not. So we're over here saying that we're only talking about the negatives, and I just wanted to say, bringing his name up, that we are just trying to be fair with it. And maybe we have to reiterate it a little bit more that, hey, you know, I don't hate this kid. I don't think he's undraftable, but I don't want a team to draft him 10 overall, 7 overall, whatever, you know? Right. I'm just trying to bring a little bit of balance to it. I know it's the time of the year where, hey, this is when this is the reality that you and I live in. Website business is booming. It's all about speculation. You're trying to get people to look at a mock draft or a something, or bring people to an article or whatever. But you just got to remember, in everything that you do, whether you love a guy, whether you hate a guy, just be fair. You right. have to be fair about it. And I think what's fair is that Marcus Davenport really struggled this week. I have no idea what Todd McShay was looking at, if he was even looking at the field. He really struggled this week. And I like McShay. I really do. But, I mean, to say that he had
the best, it was unbelievable.
It's just in no way true.
Right.
And so I think Marcus Davenport has a lot of potential. I think he's a good kid, but he's not a top 7 overall pick. He's not a top 15 overall pick. He's not a first round pick.
Now he did play better in the game, to his credit. Davenport,
okay.
It wasn't great still, but there was more in the game. It was better for sure. He put things together. I think he really benefited by, well, the tackle play was horrendous that he faced, which helped a lot. We said Jameel Demby will help you get production, but that was one part of it. Also, the snap counts were just very original. Like, there wasn't a lot of mixing up the cadence and things like that, and you could tell guys were like teeing off. Like, if you watch the game, Andrew Brown's get off is straight up insane. Like, he timed it to the millisecond. As soon as the ball moved, he was moving. I mean, he was incredibly disruptive, but there wasn't a lot of mixing up cadences and things like that, and going with any dummy calls or stuff like that. So it was a little bit easier for pass rushers to tee off. Combine that with terrible tackle play, and you've got basically what this game was. Which, I mean, if you're working on Jameel Dembe, Brian O'Neill, and Brett Toth for most of the game, you're probably going to have a decent amount of success. Brian O'Neill was had to be one of the big disappointments. I hadn't seen Brian O'Neill coming into the game, but I mean, this was a guy that was getting mocked in the first round. Everybody's talking about how he's going to, overtake some of the top tackles. And then he was horrendous through most of the week. I mean, and it wasn't even really O'Neal's fault. You can just tell he's not ready. So again, why do we have to do this with guys who aren't ready? I don't know. 6'6 and a half, 298 pounds. Guys get into his pads all the time, his power rushers. He misses with his hands constantly. My big take from going into the game was Cal Crabs asked for, like, what's your lock for today's game? And I said Brian O'Neill gets beat, and he got beat on the third play of the game for a sack. So it was kind of like, okay, that this is how easy it is to predict that Brian O'Neill's going to get beat, is because he got beat all week in practice. So again, I don't know where the first round talk with some of these guys comes from, and maybe just you're big and long and athletic, and so people still think for some reason that makes a good tackle, and it's not about that at all. O'Neill's set points are all over the place. I think he's going to get chewed up in the NFL. I mean, there wasn't a – maybe Okoronkwo, but I don't think there was like a true elite first-round, high-level type NFL pass rusher here. No, I like Okoronkwo. I like Ture. Maybe they can be those two guys can be that type of player. But I really just didn't see anybody elite here, and I thought he was bad. Brian O'Neill this week, I thought Sean Welsh was really rough from Iowa, who I had liked over the summer. And I think he does some good things in the run game, and I think Mason Cole does some good things in the run game, but both of them were brutal this week. Not good at all from those two. And there were other, I mean, Brandon Silvers and what's the Tanner Lee. Oh my gosh. So Tanner Lee in the game was, dude, it was unbelievable. He almost threw like, he had like three picks dropped, and I think he threw a couple still. How many picks? He had like 18 picks in practice or something. It was unbelievable.
Who did?
Tanner Lee.
Yeah, but Tanner Lee also had like the best dime of the week of beyond 40 yards that didn't get caught.
Who was it? Who dropped it?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't know.
Okay.
It's
probably Deshaun.
It was a sideline pass, and he just like the basket, dude. Like in the basket, and the wide receiver dropped it, and all of us were like, of course. And originally, I thought it was Josh Allen, so we were like, oh my God.
Right.
Hall of Famer. Just looks like a quarterback. But it was Tanner Lee.
Allen did play better in the game, to be fair. He bounced back and had a pretty strong game. Especially this, he was in the first time and didn't play that well, and then came back in, made some really nice throws. It's always in between with Josh Allen. It's never all bad. It's never all good. You know, it's just kind of, there's some amazing things and there's some terrible things, and you just got to try and figure out what he's going to be in the NFL. He's a really tough, going to be tough for teams, because for some teams, I don't know whether you want to take him at all. And then for other teams, you know, getting him in as a project guy that you can work with might be a priority. So lots to talk about. I mean, we could strip down this whole group for, you know, probably the next week, but I know you guys don't want to hear about the Senior Bowl forever. You ready to move on? We've got to talk about, we've got to start getting to pre-combine position rankings and see what alters and what changes. And we're going to have lots of combine content for you guys, in terms of, we're going to put our money where our mouth is and lay down top and best and worst in each category and predict.
Gonna
happen. Yep. So we got to get our tape goggles on the rest of the month and make sure we've got our, we're gonna have bets on the line, folks. Bets on the line. Don't you worry about that. I've already won the majority of bets on this podcast, and I will continue to win the majority going forward.
Do we have to bring up the who got the most games right this year?
I don't know. Do we? I think that was an unofficial number. I don't know if that was. One of our listeners kept track of it.
Right?
He might have been slipping the money on the side. He was a Bucks guy. I didn't keep track of it. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I trust these things. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. More NFL draft content. As always, we keep it rolling for you. Keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.